I mean, like, we're all volunteering, so it's like.
I've been a good Amigos member for sure.
I mean, yeah, that's, we're doing it.
Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Werke, Judge Johnson, Judge Smith, the Honorable Renee Werke presiding.
Go ahead and have a seat, everyone, and good morning. Welcome to our oral argument calendar for today, April 2. I don't know where we got to April this quickly. A couple of preliminary marks before we get going. You've both been here before. The podium goes up and down, adjusted to your height preference. Each of you will have 15 minutes for presentation of your primary case, with 5 minutes being reserved for rebuttal if you choose to utilize that. I also want to remind you to indicate who you're speaking on behalf of for our recording purposes. Our marshal today is Nick Smoger, and I'm going to ask you to please call the first case.
Calling A241348, Paul Devereaux, appellant, versus Medtronic USA, Inc., respondent.
When you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the court. My name is Colin Pastorski, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Paul Devereaux. The district court's order granting summary judgment without any reasoning or explanation is procedurally erroneous, but that is just one of many of the district court's errors in handling this matter. In addition to the district court's failure to comply with Rule 56 of the Minnesota Rules of Civil Procedure, the district court also erred in its application of law when it denied Devereaux's June 2023 motion to compel, and once again when it failed to rule on Devereaux's December 2023 motion to compel. In this appeal, Devereaux respectfully requests that this court correct the district court's errors by reversing or remanding this matter for additional proceedings. The first error that I think it makes sense to touch on.
So tell me this. What happens when you go back? I mean, you go back, we don't have any findings, and you're urging us not to put ourselves in a position, despite de novo review, that we're fact-finding or making decisions for the outcome. But what happens when you go back? Are we just sending it back and saying, Judge, you've heard this, issue your requisite findings, or do you need to have a hearing?
Yeah, I think a couple things. I think first we would like this court to remand for a reverse remand on the motion to compel. So I think it's important that we get the discovery that we think is relevant to the claims and defenses. So we would complete the discovery that we need.
That stops then the summary judgment consideration, right?
Right. Then after the discovery is complete, after we get the discovery that we needed, that then we would be having a summary judgment motion. The judge that we had previously, is my understanding, is retired, so there would be a new judge to hear this motion for summary judgment.
And this summary judgment motion was heard, correct? Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
There
so
was.
So if it went on remand, the district court decided, I'm denying a motion to compel, and then I'll decide summary judgment and explain my reasoning. That could be another
That could be another option, Your Honor, yes. I think, you know, certainly this argument was heard at summary judgment. The district court did not give any indication, really any questions for either side. So there's nothing in the record that shows or suggests the court where the court was leaning as far as how it was going to rule, either in any of the motion compels or in, at least December 2023 motion to compel. There's an order on the June 2023 motion to compel, but there's no inkling on, you know, what the judge's rationale would be for ruling on summary judgment through the summary judgment transcript.
Could you have asked on a motion for reconsideration to have had findings made, perhaps call it to the district court's attention?
As far as the summary judgment, I don't think so. I think the appropriate procedure would be to appeal. For the motions to compel, the second motion to compel from our perspective was basically an attempt for the judge to reconsider. The second motion to compel, we tried to inform the court that its previous ruling on a motion to compel was an error in application of the law as far as, you know, the discovery that we were seeking being relevant to the claims and defenses.
So can you talk to us, I don't mean to hijack whatever order you wanted to go in, but what did you need on the motion to compel that's left outstanding in order to survive summary judgment? What issues did it go to and what were you lacking?
Yes, Your Honor. So as far as what the issues that we're seeking through the first motion to compel was basically comparator discovery. and the decisional process that Medtronic went through in hiring the individuals that Mr. Devereaux was seeking to be hired into. He was looking to be hired into this regional vice president role within the group that he worked for over a decade. There's no dispute that he was certainly qualified for this role. He received, you know, prestigious awards.
This is to go into the cardiac rhythm management, where he previously was.
Correct.
And the district court heard how many? There were a total of three motions to compel?
There were three motions to compel, two seeking, I guess I would call it comparative discovery, as it relates to the failure to hire claim.
Okay, with respect to those people who were hired in cardiac rhythm management.
Right.
Okay, so let's distinguish them between, let's focus on the third motion to compel. That's the one that was not at least explicitly decided, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what was there? And let's just accept the parameters of the second, district court's second order, right, on the motion to compel. Were you denied information by the district court on the second motion to compel regarding the people hired as the regional vice presidents in the cardiac management, rhythm management unit?
Yes, yes.
You were denied that?
Yes, we were not able to get discovery into this key piece of information, particularly, again, who these individuals were. I guess we knew the identity of them, but we don't know their qualifications or performance metrics that they had at the company.
So that was already decided. You were not permitted to get that.
Correct.
So taking that as sort of a baseline, what else did you ask for in your third motion to compel that was not decided that you think would be critical to decide summary judgment if we already know that the people put into the cardiac rhythm management RVP positions, you don't get that info?
Well, I think from our, the second motion to compel in December of 2023 did seek more targeted information. I mean, it did go more towards the decisional process that Medtronic went to in hiring. It also asked for example, the diversity scorecards. Part of this claim, Devereaux's claim, is saying that Medtronic had stringent diversity quotas that it posed upon hiring managers. And they did that through diversity scorecards that would rank how diverse your team is.
You denied that in a second motion to compel?
We weren't allowed to get any information because the judge didn't rule in the
second. On the second one? I'm sorry if I'm wrong. I thought there were three.
Sorry, yeah. So okay. To be clear, we did not seek, in the second motion to compel in June 2023, we did not seek, my understanding is we did not seek diversity scorecards or performance reviews of supervisors.
Supervisors where?
The supervisors or, the hiring managers at Medtronic, the people that made the decision to place individuals into the cardiac rhythm management group.
So you're saying the third motion to compel was looking for different information than the second motion to compel?
Yes.
You acknowledge that the second motion to compel already took away the comparative information in the cardiac rhythm management, right? I'm trying to distinguish.
Yes.
What does the third one give you that you needed? You're not going to get the comparative stuff, it sounds like, in RVP under the second motion compel, and then you have that dispute for a future appeal or whatever at that time, putting myself back in time.
And let me add to that question. How do we even get there? Because we have the summary judgment determination, which we don't know if that was determinative of your third motion to compel or whether that was even addressed. So how do we get there in accordance with Judge Smith's question?
Yeah, I think, so we believe that the district court made an error and abused its discretion in ruling on the discovery motions. We believe that the court, in saying that we're not entitled to information about the individuals who were hired into these roles being not relevant, is wrong. We think that we should be able to get that information in order to present to the court a full record that has information that's relevant to the claims and Medtronic's defenses to those claims at summary judgment. So I think that there's multiple factors or ways in which the court either erred as a matter of law or abused its discretion that prevented Devereaux from being able to present and prosecute his claims fully that the rules provide for.
Okay, so challenging all of the district court's orders on the motions to compel, and that's why you're going back to the second one. Now, we should decide those as well.
Yes.
On appeal.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And did you file an affidavit as required by Rule 56 identifying the issues and the need?
Yes. As part of our response to a summary judgment motion, Your Honor, we did file an affidavit under pursuant to 56.04 that said that summary judgment should be deferred or denied because there's discovery that still needs to be had. Specifically, we told the court that there was the pending motion to compel that was already heard that needed to be decided on, that we thought that had crucial evidence for the court's consideration when making a decision on the summary judgment hearing. That was, we submitted that affidavit in response to our summary judgment motion. The issue, of course, is that the judge didn't issue an order or application or provide its reasoning or explanation as to why it granted summary judgment, so we don't even know if it considered Devereaux's request to have summary judgment deferred or denied. And we do think that there's case law that we provided that says, and it's in our briefing, that supports our position that when a district court rules on summary judgment when there's a pending motion to compel, that that is an abuse of discretion.
So if I could understand Medtronic's response, or I think it's that, well, depending, I guess, on what your claim is that if it's undisputed that only internal candidates were going to be considered for cardiac rhythm management unit, and your client was not an internal candidate, that the rest of this doesn't matter, that that's a non-discriminatory, that he's not qualified, right, to, that's the argument, to obtain one of those. He didn't apply, but again, they weren't taking applications, I guess, but he wasn't qualified because he wasn't within that unit. Is it your argument, is it your client's argument that the decision, I don't know if the reorganization is challenged, I don't see that, I don't know whether the decision to only take internal candidates is alleged to be intentionally discriminatory against your client. Tell us what, walk us through that, why it matters then.
Yeah, so at summary judgment, the only discrimination claims that were before the court were these failure to hire, failure to transfer claims. Okay. We were no longer alleging or claiming that the termination of Devereaux's employment itself was discriminatory. So the only claims that were before the court at summary judgment was Medtronic's decision to not consider Devereaux, to not hire Devereaux into the regional vice president management positions that he was both qualified for, and everyone knew that he was seeking to be, you know, considered for that role. Was that decision discriminatory? And did that unreasonably exclude him on the basis of his sex or his age from employment opportunities that other individuals outside of his protected classes received? I think that that is a hotly contested and disputed issue, whether or not Medtronic actually limited the hiring decisions to the cardiac rhythm management business. There's evidence in the record that hiring managers were not aware of this being the case, and that there's testimony, I believe, in that we cited both at summary judgment and also in the Court of Appeals, that one of the hiring managers said, yeah, I would have considered him because he was qualified for this role, because he had over 10 years' experience in this exact role. He trained a lot of the folks in here, and the people that Medtronic hired were just objectively less qualified for the role. They never had or held a regional vice president position before. They never had an experience managing managers of the company before.
So you know who was hired and who you think would be the comparators. And I presume then you know whether they came from inside cardiac rhythm management, and I presume they did, all of them. But your argument is there's a factual dispute as to whether they in fact considered people outside of that unit, and whether that's the claim that they did only consider inside is at least disputed or a pretext or something.
Correct, yes. I mean, what Medtronic is saying from our perspective is not a qualification question, it's more of a reason for not hiring issue. So as far as making a prima facie case for a failure to hire, failure to transfer, we have to show that Devereaux was in a protected class, that he was qualified for the role, that he was not selected for the role, and evidence to show that there's an inference of discrimination here. There's really no dispute. I mean, every Medtronic employee testified that Devereaux was qualified to perform the role. Medtronic is saying as their reason for not selecting him that the reason why he was not selected is because they only hired people within the company. Again, we presented a lot of evidence to the court that allows a jury to make an inference that that's not actually true, including evidence that Paul Devereaux was on a list of candidates to be considered in October, that he was never told that he could not be considered for these roles. He was encouraged to look inside the company for any roles, and the company told him that he'd be considered for any roles that he was qualified for across the company. And the fact that the hiring managers we're not aware of this alleged requirement that anybody that are going to be hired into this regional vice president position actually have to work within the cardiac rhythm management group at the time that they were being considered. And also, of course, all the other things that were going on at Medtronic at the time regarding their diversity quotas would allow a jury to say, the reason why you didn't consider Devereaux for this position is not because he wasn't within regional vice president at cardiac rhythm management at the time, even though he was really qualified to do so, is because Medtronic enforced these diversity quotas on its hiring managers. Unless your honors have any other questions at all, I see my time is coming up here.
Oh, I do have one question. I'm sure we'll get to it. I want to talk to you about employee and the significance of being an employee or not. Why does, if your claim is on a failure to hire, and I'm just reading the statute, why do you, does your client even need to be an employee?
Yes, I'm glad you asked that question, Your Honor. I think that this the whole employee argument is a little bit of a red herring that got lost in at both at the lower court and in the pleadings, but it was something that was argued both at summary judgment and our briefing. It was touched on in our the transcript of the summary judgment hearing. But under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, you only need to be an employee when your claim involves a discharge. Again, like we said, we got rid of that claim before summary judgment. We were no longer alleging that his discharge from Medtronic was discriminatory. What we were alleging was that the other employment decisions that were made, the failure to hire, were the discriminatory conduct. So in that case, there's no requirement that he be an employee. It's only that he be a person. From our perspective, that was something that was both touched on briefly in the briefing, also at the transcript of the oral argument. But it was certainly something that was really the hot contested issue was whether or not Devereaux was an employee. But from our perspective, regardless of the way that this court looks at it, whether it's this court or a lower court, Devereaux should still be considered an employee for purposes of the Minnesota Human Rights Act because he consistently traveled to Minnesota for work.
Thank you. You'll have your rebuttal time.
Thank you.
May it please the court. This court should consider.
And your name and the party.
Excuse me, Your Honor. My name is Jenny Gassman Pines. I represent Medtronic.
Thank you.
The respondent in this matter. This court should consider the substantive issues in this case instead of remanding and should affirm the district court's decision to grant summary judgment in Medtronic's favor. There are several independent reasons that this court can and should affirm, but I'd like to start today by focusing the court on one key issue, that even if Mr. Devereaux were an employee under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, which we believe he was not, and even if he could establish a prima facie case of sex or age discrimination, which we believe he cannot, his claim still fails because Medtronic articulated a legitimate, non-discriminatory reason for the decisions it made with respect to the restructure of the cardiac rhythm management division and the restructure of the other division in which Mr. Devereaux worked.
Doesn't that require this court to make findings of fact?
It does not require this court to make findings of fact, Your Honor. On de novo review on summary judgment, it requires this court to look at the facts in the record, a record that is complete, and that will be complete whether this court remands or not. The record will remain the same. Now, I understand that Mr. Devereaux wants to reopen the record and have additional discovery. We don't think that's appropriate. I'd be happy to address that. But assuming this court says the district court didn't abuse its discretion by denying those motions to compel, then the record is set. And as long as this court has independent bases to affirm summary judgment, as long as there is a basis to affirm, then this court should do that. Now, this court could follow the reasoning of the district court if the district court had issued a decision, but it doesn't have to, because this court is doing a de novo review of the facts and the
record. Even if we could, and this is what I struggle with, even if we agree with you, we seem to be signaling then the district court to just
grant or deny and let the Court of Appeals ferret through the information and not do their work. That's what bothers me, is the signal it gives to a district court in terms of their responsibilities.
Well, what you're getting at, Your Honor, is what do we do when the district court doesn't issue a decision as the rule requires it to do, and then we get here with a full record.
Thank goodness it doesn't happen on a regular basis. This is a little unusual.
It is unusual, Your Honor, and I agree, but this is where we are now, and so the question for this court is, what is the remedy when we have a full record, when there are bases to affirm summary judgment, when you are doing de novo review? Should we, after the parties have fully briefed all of the issues, we had an opportunity to identify all of the ways in which this court can and should affirm, should you remand to the district court? And the answer is no, because what that would mean, and really it gets back, Judge Warkey, to your first question at the outset, what would happen if we go back? What would happen is we would go back, there would be an identical record, assuming that you don't find an abuse of discretion on the motion to compel. There would be an identical record. The court would issue its decision, and then we would be back here. Same record, and you can take or leave the decision.
That is the way our trial court works, is that they need to do their job, and sending it back with direction from this court can also, I think you'll agree, have instructions on whether the record can be reopened or whether the court should simply issue findings based on what's before it or what it should have done at that time.
That's certainly true, Your Honor, but what I'm suggesting and what Medtronic is arguing here today is that that would be a waste of judicial resources, because we're here now, there are independent bases on which to decide summary judgment, the issues are ripe and ready for this court, and you'll be undertaking the same exercise when we come back here again and brief the same identical issues again and have this same argument again. So we're here now.
And I cut you off when you started to say, what are the independent bases that we can rely on in affirming a summary judgment determination?
So there are several, Your Honor, and I'll start by focusing, though, on the legitimate, non-discriminatory reasons for Medtronic's.
And I think the decision you should focus on, as I hear, is a decision not to consider them into the cardiac rhythm management, because it doesn't sound like they're challenging the reorganization or anything. So let's focus on whether there's a disputed issue of fact that is raised or could be raised with discovery that was wrongly denied, let's posit, in order to determine whether that's, in fact, a pretext, the rationale that we only went internal.
Yes, exactly, Your Honor.
Okay.
Well, and what is undisputed is that the decision makers who decided to identify the folks and select the folks to these AVP positions in cardiac rhythm management, that they only considered people who were within cardiac rhythm management. It's not about whether there was a policy prohibiting them from considering someone outside of cardiac rhythm management. It's not about whether there was a policy saying that they only could consider folks within cardiac rhythm management. The undisputed facts are that they only considered individuals within cardiac rhythm management, and they only selected them.
Can you respond to the argument that if the hiring authorities didn't know about, that there's evidence in the record that the hiring authorities didn't know about this, and I understand it's not a policy, but it's their decision they made. Why isn't that a factual dispute about whether that's in fact true?
What I would encourage you to do, Your Honor, is actually to look at specifically what those folks said. And they were talking about prohibitions and policies, and that's true. There's not a dispute. There wasn't some rule that said they weren't allowed to look outside of cardiac rhythm management. There wasn't a rule that said they could only look within cardiac rhythm management. But just as a matter of fact, they only did. Ultimately, at the end of the day, when they were making the decision, the only people they were looking at were within cardiac rhythm management. And Mr. Devereaux cannot and has not identified anyone outside of cardiac rhythm management like himself who was considered and rejected or was considered or hired.
Were there requests for discovery on that were denied in a motion to compel?
No, Your Honor. Mr. Devereaux was not asking about people outside of cardiac rhythm management other than himself, and that he asked about himself, and that discovery was provided. Instead, what Mr. Devereaux wanted was personnel files and backgrounds and details about the people who were actually hired in cardiac rhythm management. But those folks are not appropriate comparators because they are not similarly situated in all relevant respects to Mr. Devereaux, because Mr. Devereaux was over here in an entirely different department.
Right. I could see them being comparators if there is, in fact, let's posit for a moment, that
sure.
in fact they did consider people outside.
Exactly.
And in which case, then the people who actually got it, I can see getting information. But you're saying there was not requested information that we would find in here as to whether, in fact, they did look outside.
That's right. And the testimony and from the decision makers and the written discovery responses from Medtronic are clear that in this reorganization, Medtronic made a specific decision in the cardiac rhythm management division only to stay within that division. That was because they were restructuring, they wanted to follow their own internal advancement plans that they already had in cardiac rhythm management, that they wanted to promote from within, essentially, and they made a decision based on their business judgment that that was the right way to handle the restructure of that department.
And Mr. Devereaux was... that true at all stages? In other words, when you say that only internal candidates were considered, do you mean only considered as finalists, or is it also true? Is there evidence that from the very beginning of the process, only internal candidates were considered?
Yeah, it's a great question, Your Honor. And Medtronic does not dispute that Mr. Devereaux's name did appear on an initial list of potential candidates when cardiac rhythm management was looking to do the restructure. But what he can't dispute and what there isn't a dispute about is at the end of the day, cardiac rhythm management said, well, it's fine that we might have a list of candidates to consider, but actually what we're doing over here for our business reasons is only looking within the unit. We're not going to go outside of the unit.
And
we're not
that evident? What proves that?
That's testimony from the decision makers, and we've cited that in our brief. They talked about the decision-making process, how they decided who they considered. The other testimony that you have in the record and is that there is a second reason that Medtronic did not consider Mr. Devereaux at the end of the day, or if they would have considered folks outside of CRM, he still wouldn't have been on the list. And that's because of Mr. Devereaux's demeanor and his leadership style. There is undisputed testimony that the decision makers did not care for how Mr. Devereaux showed up at work. That's their prerogative to make that decision, that business judgment, that we don't want this person in our division to be our leader. So that there are two independent rationales, whether they are whether they're qualifications for Mr. Devereaux to meet a prima facie case, set that aside, because at the end of the day, those are the rationales that Medtronic gave, and there is no material fact dispute about either of those. Plus,
why wouldn't there be if he was a continued, if he was never fired from? I presume it wouldn't be that hard, maybe, to say it's a disputed fact if he worked at that unit without being fired. If he was hired into another unit, I don't know what his employment evals look like, et cetera. But
and we cited in our briefing, Your Honor, his employment evals, and although he did get positive comments on some of his performance throughout his history, both in cardiac rhythm management and in the division where he was when this decision was made, there were consistent comments about his demeanor, about his leadership style that included sarcasm. There's some pretty colorful quotes in our brief that we talk about. Those are all legitimate, non-discriminatory reasons that an employer can point to say, I don't want to select this person. And this all assumes that there is an adverse action to begin with, that he could even prove that a failure to consider him for a role in and of itself is an adverse action. And we don't think he can even get there, but even assuming that he could, once Medtronic has articulated this legitimate non-discriminatory reason, the burden shifts back to him to show pretext,
but
he can't do it.
Wouldn't failure to hire, isn't that, if this is a failure to hire case, which it seems rightly, I mean, I know that you say it's failure to transfer, but it seems like a failure to hire. I think that was like the people are going to have to apply for those positions, right? The people who got it, I presume, I don't know.
The people who got it actually did not apply. There was not an application process because it was in the context of a restructure.
So if the argument is, and let's posit that they decided not to open it up because they understood that, you know, the plaintiff was interested in it and they only wanted younger people. Let's just posit all that. Then it's a failure to hire case, right?
Assuming that he could establish those elements, yes, then
isn't
it would
that
be
an adverse employment action.
That if it were a failure to hire, if he could meet the elements as established, that could be an adverse action, yes. But that's why I'm saying, even assuming he could state a failure to hire claim, Medtronic has articulated a legitimate non-discriminatory reason for not hiring him. And that's because of the process they were using. Whether he was on an initial list or not, at the end of the day, it is undisputed that they only looked in cardiac rhythm management. Those are the only people who were evaluated and who were selected. And separately from that, and perhaps this goes back to whether it was even an adverse action, Mr. Devereaux, if his job hadn't been eliminated, the role would have been the same, right, just in a different business unit. So it wasn't a promotion. It wasn't really a failure to hire. It wasn't a failure to transfer. It's a like position in one division and a like position in another division. But even setting that aside, at the end of the day, Mr. Devereaux doesn't have also any facts to show or to get to the jury on pretext, and pretext for intentional age discrimination or pretext for intentional sex discrimination. There are no stray comments. There are no comments about how we want to get rid of older folks or how we only want women. And actually, the group of people who were hired were a mix of women and men, some younger folks, some older folks. So there has to be something more in order to get to the jury. And Mr. Devereaux doesn't have anything. He has waved his arms a little bit about diversity goals, but that's not enough. That is not enough. What you have to do is look at the decision-making in this case. And the decision-makers here said, we evaluated individuals based on their individual merit. And with respect to Mr. Devereaux, he didn't make the cut because he wasn't even in this group.
Ms. Gaspin-Pines, I'm sorry to interrupt, but time is short. But I'd like to go back to the issue about the definition of employee.
Absolutely,
so,
Your Honor.
Your opposing counsel said that it's irrelevant because this is now a failure to hire case. It's not a termination case. Do you have a response to that?
I do, Your Honor. I have two responses to that. The first response is that this argument, the argument that Mr. Devereaux is raising now, he raised for the first time on appeal in his reply brief. He never made that argument on summary judgment at the district court in any of the briefing or at oral argument. He did not make that argument in his statement of the issues to this court. He didn't make it in the opening brief. He only made it in the reply brief.
What about the premise? I mean, do you agree with what I think could be a fact that in the district court, a plaintiff did limit his claim to failure to hire and did swear off anything about termination? Is that clear?
Your time has expired, but please answer Judge Johnson's question.
Thank you, Your Honor. So it is clear, Your Honor, that in the district court, Mr. Devereaux agreed that he doesn't have a disparate impact claims or anything related to this restructure, and he is not bringing a claim related to his termination. But I would say that the import of the failure to hire, it only matters in the context of his original claim actually being eliminated. And that's how we also circle back to this question of the definition of employee. He otherwise would have gone from AVP to AVP, identical roles in two different business units. He's saying that's enough for an adverse action. We don't think it is. The only reason it matters to him is because his position was then eliminated and he was terminated. So he's disclaiming the termination claim. It's not a claim anymore, but it only matters because he was terminated, and that's how we ultimately circle back on the employee issue. And employee, as defined, applies
to
discharge. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. And you'll have the last word.
All right, thank you, Your Honors. I have 2 points, but certainly if you have any questions beyond that, feel free to ask me. Just touching on the fact that opposing counsel just mentioned that this was not raised before, I disagree. This was touched on, I argued on at the summary judgment hearing on page 20, line 20 through page 21, line 8. I argue that the Kuklinski reasoning that from the federal court, the District Court of Minnesota, is erroneous, and I argue that the Minnesota Human Rights Act cannot be so narrowly tailored so that an out-of-state resident who is seeking to come to Minnesota for work, who applies for a job in Minnesota, but is denied that opportunity because of, you know, protected class, they wouldn't have a recourse under the Minnesota Human Rights Act.
Are you referring page 20 of your memorandum of law in the district court or in the oral argument?
Page 20 of the summary judgment transcript.
The transcript.
And then on the memorandum of law, so that's docket 131, on page 38 of the brief, I also note that the MHRA provides recourse when an employer excludes a person from seeking employment. So these are things, you know, certainly we could have argued it a little bit more eloquently, but it's things that were certainly brought up to the court for consideration, both at the briefing stage.
My question had to do with your comments in your opening oral argument that the employee issue is a red herring because this is only a failure to hire claim. And I didn't see that in the briefing. I may have missed it in the reply brief. But I think that was the issue. I mean, did you argue that particular point to the district court?
Not as eloquently. What I argued was that the Minnesota Human Rights Act in this particular case should not be so narrowly tailored.
I think that's a different point, or that's the general point. But I guess I think that it sounds like, I think maybe there's two different issues here, but maybe you should just proceed.
Right. And I just want to make clear that we did talk and present to the court the arguments. I mean, first off, our complaints alleges the person the provision of the Minnesota statute that's relevant to this particular claim that should not exclude a person from employment in the terms and conditions of employment. That particular subdivision of the Minnesota Human Rights Act is both in our complaint, and it was also argued in our brief, and it was touched on in the oral argument as well. The next piece I wanted to touch on was the legitimate reason for termination. You know, this is a fact question. It is what it is. This matter was fully briefed from the court with the evidence that we had. We do think that there's more information to be had that we were prevented from getting.
What evidence do you have of that the defendant's asserted non-discriminatory reason for not hiring him is false and is a pretext?
Yeah, so there's a lot. I mean, of course, Medtronic wants to present to this court that its reason for termination is sacrosanct and it can't be questioned. That's not the rule of discrimination cases. We're allowed to present to the court with any evidence that allows a jury to question that decision that they're putting forward, the very question that even its own decision makers were not aware of. They did not know of this decision to limit the people for consideration to individuals who worked within the cardiac rhythm management group. But to answer your question, Your Honor, there was at least 5 different pieces of evidence of pretext that we presented to the court, and it's on page 51 through 55 of our summary judgment brief. We do think, for example, that the fact that the hiring decision makers, their performance reviews, we didn't get the performance reviews, but Medtronic publishes a document that says all hiring managers and leaders are specifically ranked on their performance on their ability to increase diversity within their team. So if a decision maker does not have a diverse team or they don't take steps to increase the number of women at work or increase the number of people of color at work, they will get disciplined as far as getting a low ranking on the performance reviews. Of course, we all know.
Not disciplined, but they'd get a negative review.
Right, a low ranking, which would prevent their opportunity for higher, you know, potentially a bonus or, you know, moving upward at the chain of.
Let me focus my question. I guess, I mean, if defendant's non-discriminatory reason is that the CRM division wanted to consider only internal candidates, what evidence do you have that that is a pretext and is false?
Right. I think that is one, is because we believe the real question is, do we have anything to attack their reason for only selecting people? So why did why was there some reason, which we don't know who made this decision, to limit the individuals for consideration to individuals in the cardiac management group? It could be because the cardiac rhythm management group had a diverse team that they wanted to elevate to regional vice president positions, and they did not want Paul Devereaux to be considered in that pool of candidates because if Paul was considered in that pool of candidates, he would have been objectively selected for the position because he had better qualifications than the individuals who were slotted for these roles.
So your time has expired, too. I just need to call that to your attention.
Thank you.
You can wrap up.
Thank you. I mean, I'll just direct your Honor's attention instead of going through the evidence. I mean, our summary judgment memorandum, pages 51 through 55, does talk about all the different evidence of pretext that we have. Again, the issue is that we don't know whether the court considered this and if it considered it correctly. So for these reasons, we believe that this court, request that this court reverse or remand this matter for additional proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for appearing today. Your arguments are helpful. A decision will be issued in the statutory time frame. Thank you.